This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello, welcome to Powerhouse Politics. I'm ABC News Chief White House Correspondent Jonathan Carl.
And I'm ABC News Political Director Rick Klein.
Rick, the president is out on his second foreign trip. This one, particularly high stakes. He is in Poland on his way to Germany, and he will be meeting with, finally, at long last, one-on-one, Russian President Vladimir Putin.
You don't say. I hadn't heard anything about this. There's no anticipation around this one at all.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, you heard it. Look, this is as big as they come. There is no bigger meeting than with Vladimir Putin. So many storylines when it comes to the election hacking and the allegations around that, the investigations that are swirling around, not to mention national security, Syria, North Korea, these big crises that always seem to have Russia playing a role. Russia is everywhere and anywhere in these discussions. And to now know that the two men are going to meet face to face, will be dissecting every frame of video around it, every hint of sound that comes out of it. This is a big moment for President Trump because he's got such skepticism, such criticism over his relationship with Russia, even from inside his own party. People just cannot figure out what his stance is on Russia, what his stance is on Vladimir Putin. We get some big questions answered in the next 24 hours.
And we have here on Powerhouse Politics an interesting mix of guests. In just a few moments, we'll be talking to Andrei Sitov, who is with the Russian state-controlled news agency TASS, somebody who has been covering the White House for nearly 20 years. He is in there. I see him virtually every day. We have one of those briefings, which I guess is fewer and fewer these days. They're not called on so much by Sean Spicer these days. I guess he doesn't like the imagery of calling on a Russian journalist, but Andre has some very firm opinions about the Russia issue, clearly a Russian perspective. We will also be joined by Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma, Republican member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and one of those Republicans that is not afraid to criticize the president.
Yeah, and I think the differing perspectives are key here because the Russians are looking forward to this as well. They're trying to get to know this new president, and so are Senate Republicans, frankly, because they are in a position where, given the investigations, given the policies that are set, you know, John, I'm most curious about which Trump we're going to get. We've seen President Trump and his inclination to want to be liked and to even suggest in the past that he has a relationship with Vladimir Putin, that Vladimir Putin has said nice things about him, he'd say nice things back. There's also the inclination to want to be tough and to want to be feared and engender that kind of respect via that fear. Putin knows that game quite well. So is that the attitude that he takes in this meeting? When you have real issues on the table, it's not just meddling in the election. You have big national security challenges as well, economic issues, of course, territorial issues that he's calling out a bit. All of those things crash together and they happen in the most personal of settings.
And we had also just moments ago, we had the first press conference, by President Trump on foreign soil, one of these where you get two questions from the American side, two questions from the Polish side, side by side with President Duda of Poland. And I tell you one thing I'm always interested in is who is Donald Trump going to call on in these press conferences? And I thought it was interesting that the very first person called on foreign soil by President Trump was David Murtasko of the Daily Mail. A very interesting choice because he's somebody who just weeks ago was under consideration for the job of White House Communications Director.
So I guess he didn't get the job.
He got the question. But he asked a question. He had a two-part question, and this is what we do sometimes. We don't get a chance, any journalist, you know, you don't get a chance to ask the president a lot of questions. Sometimes you pack in widely divergent topics. So he asked a question about North Korea and if the president was prepared to use military force against the North Korean threat. Very good question, very on topic. But he also asked about CNN.
I have to ask about this. Since you started the whole wrestling video thing, what are your thoughts about what has happened since then? I mean, CNN went after you and has threatened to expose the identity of a person they said was responsible for it. I'd like your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think what CNN did was unfortunate for them. As you know now, they have some pretty serious problems. They have been fake news for a long time. They've been covering me in a very, very dishonest way. Do you have that also, by the way, Mr. President? But CNN and others, I mean, not others, NBC is equally as bad, despite the fact that I made them a fortune with The Apprentice, but they forgot that. But I will say that CNN has really taken it too seriously, and I think they've hurt themselves very badly, very, very badly. And what we want to see in the United States is honest, beautiful, free, but honest press. We want to see fair press. I think it's a very important thing. We don't want fake news. And by the way, not everybody is fake news, but we don't want fake news. Bad thing. Very bad for our country.
Beautiful, free, and honest press. Everybody is not fake news. I guess he's talking about powerhouse politics there, Rick.
I suppose that's the case. And an image ran through my head as you hear that answer is that Vladimir Putin is smiling because he also doesn't like fake news. Or the two of them could potentially bond over their mutual disdain for fake news. They both use the idea of fake news as their own version of creating what you might call an alternative fact. I thought that was striking to be on foreign soil for the president of the United States to be attacking American media institutions as quote-unquote fake. We know it's a tool in the toolbox, but I feel like this is one that has a particular edge given the setting and given the stakes and given the timing right on the eve of this meeting with Putin.
I agree. It was rather extraordinary. And to take that shot at NBC entirely gratuitously, he wasn't asked about NBC, and to bring up The Apprentice. I mean, just kind of...
As if that makes a difference, that he had a successful show for their entertainment division. He's expecting, what, nicer news coverage?
And the next reporter he called on, just for the record, was Hallie Jackson of NBC.
Of NBC,
but whatever,
my goodness.
Whatever. It's hard to figure out. The president also, in that press conference, came forward and acknowledged that the Russians did it. And the "it" I think he was referring to was the election hacking. But then he quickly added that others may have been involved, other countries, other people. But then Rick. He went on when the question was followed up to take a shot at the intelligence communities again, bringing up the failure with weapons of mass destruction as a way to raise questions about whether or not the accuracy, whether or not you can trust their findings on Russian meddling in the election. But take a listen to this excerpt.
I heard it was 17 agencies. I said, boy, that's a lot. Do we even have that many intelligence agencies, right? Let's check it. And we did some very heavy research. It turned out to be 3 or 4. It wasn't 17. And many of your compatriots had to change their reporting and they had to apologize and they had to correct. Now, with that being said, mistakes have been made. I agree. I think it was Russia, but I think it was probably other people and or countries. And I see nothing wrong with that statement.
Yeah. So let's just try, before we turn to our guest, to unpack that a little bit.
You got
to
unpack like every phrase. every piece of it.
I'm just going to do a little bit, okay. Rick. Please. Don't set expectations. So he said he heard it was 17. That's because much of the reporting said 17 intelligence agencies have, signed off on the conclusion that the Russians have hacked the election, et cetera, et cetera. So he did some heavy research and found out it was only 3 or 4. So let's
talk about heavy research.
let me try to explain it. As you know, there were two intelligence products that were made public on the Russian hacking issue. The first was the preliminary report that came out in October before the election. That was a product that was signed off on, yes, all of the intelligence agencies, all of them. Okay, so the 17 or 16 intelligence agencies. That was signed off on all of them. That was what they call an IC product. That was the intelligence community finding, we believe the Russians are, attempting to interfere with the election and we're behind the hack. The more extensive report that came out earlier this year was specifically a product of three intelligence agencies. So, and it said so. You didn't have to do any research.
But does it matter at all, John? I mean,
just look at the cover sheet.
But I don't think it matters. It makes any difference at all if it's 3 or 17. It's the consensus view of the intelligence agencies. And
yes.
To me, this was, again, we talked about undermining the media on foreign soil. This is undermining the intelligence community very
yes.
directly.
Yes, and the part I didn't play was bringing up the weapons of mass destruction.
Right. A low
bringing
point
up
right.
the failure of the CIA on the issue that ultimately sent us to war in Iraq.
And once again, Vladimir Putin is smiling. I mean, this yeah. is it tees up the meeting, it seems to me, very, very well for Vladimir Putin and the perspective of undermining the credibility of major United States institutions. That's part of what makes this extraordinary.
All right. And we're joined now by Andrei Sitov of the Russian TASS news agency. Andrei, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Now, you've been a presence in the White House briefing room for a long time. You've covered multiple U.S. presidents, and I know you've taken a great interest in covering President Trump and the constant Russia story. Now, finally, at long last, 5 months into the Trump presidency, we are about to have the first bilateral meeting between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. What do you expect out of this meeting?
I expect them to meet. I expect them to get together and hopefully deal with each other the way President Trump suggested that he would. I think this is badly needed by both our countries. And frankly, I also think that it's in the interest of the whole world because a lot of security challenges and problems in the world depend on being handled together by the United States and by Russia.
I've noticed it's been hard to get information out of this White House, at least for me, and I'm sure for you as well, about what the Trump administration is looking for out of this meeting. The Russians seem to have been, you know, much more specific about the issues they want to raise with President Trump. What have you been able to get anything out of Sean Spicer or any of our?
Obviously, the administration is working under a lot of strain because of the constant stream of allegations, completely unproven allegations, but still coming to the administration every day. I haven't to answer directly your question, and I'm sorry for mumbling here because I've been up since 4 a.m. this morning, and I've been covering the trip of your president to Europe. And then his speech in Poland. I couldn't get much from the White House for obvious reasons. They do not want to produce even the impression of talking too much to the press, especially the Russian press.
What was the initial take for you and a Russian audience to the president's comments this morning on the eve of the Putin meeting? He said that he again cast doubt on whether the hacking was engineered by Russia, also cast doubt on the American news media, intelligence agencies. He also called out Russia a bit in his speech in Poland. But what was your take? How do you think it's being received in Russia?
I'm not surprised at all. Frankly, I think the president has been consistent about these things that he expresses. I think the a lot of variations and speculation around that has been present in the media, but that's a different story. We all know how the president views the media these days. But for him, frankly, I have hopes. I still have hopes that we can move to something better in our relations, the relations between our states. I've already said that this would be beneficial for all, and I do hope that President Trump sticks to his line.
So President Trump's been asked many times his views on President Putin. We've heard a variety of different answers over the years. What do you think President Putin thinks of President Trump?
The only thing we don't know, and this has been misrepresented here. This is why I'm immediately referring to that. Mr. Trump himself, even before he was president, referred to it saying, "This guy calls me a genius." This is not entirely true. The Russian word "yarky" means out of the ordinary, a person standing out. So he did call him a standout politician. That's for sure. What else he thinks about that? I think the official line has been always that the Russians do not deal with personalities. In America, they actually assume that the policies in Washington will remain the same, more or less, regardless of who is in power. I have just been talking to the Russian ambassador, who is leaving his position shortly for his final interview, and he said that many times over. That they were getting ready for dealing with whoever gets elected, be that Trump or Hillary Clinton, again, with the assumption that the policies will basically be the same and driven by the American national interest. And this is what we are seeing, with the caveat, with the exception that obviously the administration is under enormous strain from the media, from the public hoopla around anything to do with Russia, which, frankly, I resent and I think is not helpful.
But, Andre, we heard from the president in his speech. Let's deal with two things he said today. First, something we really haven't heard from Donald Trump, which was explicit criticism of Russia. Let's play it.
We urge Russia to cease its destabilizing activities in Ukraine and elsewhere, and its support for hostile regimes, including Syria and Iran.
And we also heard the president in the news conference say explicitly that he believes that Russia was behind the hack of the DNC, Russia had meddled with the election. Let's play that.
Well, I think it was Russia, and I think it could have been other people in other countries. Could have been a lot of people interfered.
So maybe this gets to your point that ultimately there isn't much of a change, even with the extraordinarily different personalities and statements of policy between Obama and Trump. You can't imagine a more different, a more dramatically different approach between those two men. But what do you make of those two statements from the president?
I think the president has repeated his longstanding positions. The positions have been known. The Russians have obviously refused to accept the allegations of their quote-unquote destabilizing actions, be that in other countries or elsewhere. Basically it's unchanged, and maybe this is good that it's unchanged. Again, we are all waiting for the big meeting tomorrow, and my hopes are that they will be able to deal with each other. And by the way, I should have said at the beginning that I'm only speaking for myself here. I'm not speaking for my agency, much less I'm speaking for Russia. This is a little bit loose in the way Americans use the word Russia in this whole context, because I don't know what Russian hackers do. Nobody does. I mean, there are probably thousands. I'm not an expert in this field. I assume there are thousands and maybe millions of people. There are millions of people on the internet every day. That's for sure. I don't know how many of them are hackers. But saying Russia about all of them is simply not true. To begin with, I could say that a lot of the so-called quote-unquote Russian hackers come from other countries of the former Soviet Union where people speak the Russian language. And from what I saw in the reports, the linguistic references played a big role, which to me is not convincing. So like President Trump has just said in the quote that you played, it could have been Russian hackers, it could have been somebody else.
You mentioned an exit interview with Ambassador Kislyak.
Right.
That's intriguing to me. I'm just curious what you learned about the Trump-Russia relationship from the standpoint of a man who's become famous for reasons that a diplomat normally wouldn't want to be because of the meetings he's had. What's the sense from the departing ambassador about the state of the Putin administration's relationship with the Trump administration?
He says it is not easy. It's not been easy for them to deal with the Trump administration because of the quote-unquote poisonous atmosphere around Russia. He personally resents, I think, his celebrity in this way because, as he says, this celebrity is based upon lies. About what they do at the embassy. And frankly, I've been in Washington, D.C. for 20 years. I've seen several administrations. I've seen several ambassadors. And I can tell you they all do the same thing. It's their job to keep in touch with people, to build new relationships, to talk constantly to officials, current officials especially, and former officials. This is what they all do. And nothing, absolutely nothing that I've seen gives me any sense that nothing, that something what's the word now that they like using, quote-unquote, nefarious, that something nefarious was taking place.
So what is your sense of this meeting? What does the Russian side want to get out of the meeting with Trump? I mean, I see some, you know, one of the issues, for instance, that that will be raised by President Putin is the idea of the diplomatic compounds that were shut down by President Obama in retaliation for the election meddling. What's on the list of deliverables that the Russians want to get?
The Russian compounds is a small issue. It's an irritant, obviously, but it's I don't even know if it's an issue to be raised at the level of the leaders of the heads of state. Of the two countries. It's probably more suitable for some lower rank diplomats to discuss. The ultimate goal of the Russians in this meeting, and I'm quoting my ambassador here, the Ambassador Kislyak, is quote-unquote normalcy. They want to come back to the normal state of relations, which is, again, especially, it's important for any country, but it's especially important among such big and important, powerful nations as the United States and Russia.
So is your sense that this is being anticipated as much in Russia as it is in the United States? You're seeing the kind of fevered pitch of media anticipation around this meeting. Is the Russian audience as dialed into this meeting as the American audience is?
Yes, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are. But since I've been here for all these years, I probably am less qualified to speak about the Russian reaction, Russian audience reaction to this than the American one.
But the point is, it's a big deal that for people that are following
deal.
This.
It is a huge deal.
So I know you have to go, but before you do, there one point of speculation on the American side is whether or not President Trump will bring up the meddling in the election. Our intelligence agencies, of course, and I know you have raised serious questions about the intelligence findings on this, but our intelligence agency is saying not only that the Russian government hacked the DNC, meddled in the elections with an intent to hurt Hillary Clinton and help Donald Trump, but also that this was an action that was directed personally by President Putin himself. What would the reaction be of President Putin if Donald Trump actually brings this up?
I don't know. I don't know. We need to ask President Putin. But he has said many times about his overall view of this, and I fully agree with him on that. I think it's an internal American matter. The Americans are fighting each other. I think America is the strongest country in the world, economically, politically, militarily. No one can do much harm to America from the outside, but if the Americans want to do harm to themselves on the inside, what can we do? And when I say that Americans are doing harm to themselves on the inside, I'm specifically thinking about what your intelligence services are doing. All the leaks that President Trump complains about, this report, quote unquote, with allegations against Russia. If I were an American taxpayer, I would be very what's the word? I'm sorry again. I'm sleepy. I'm tired. I this early in the morning. I would be interested to see how these guys are spending taxpayers' money if they produce such meager results. Nothing has been proven at all, absolutely, and there's been so much leaking. That I think if I were an American, I would ask, what is doing more harm here? The alleged interference that nobody has proven, or the leaking of the sensitive information from inside the intelligence and all the other like government bodies that comes now to the pages of the newspapers all over America. I don't know. It's up to you guys. It's if you want to do it to yourselves again, what we as outsiders, we can do nothing about it.
All right, Andrei Sitov with the TASS News Agency. I always appreciate hearing your perspective, and we'll see you around the White House briefing room.
So, thank you, sir. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. So Rick, an interesting perspective, because clearly it's a Russian perspective. It's a Russian government perspective. But Andrei is somebody who has been, who I have seen in that briefing room under Presidents Bush, Obama, Trump. And what's interesting is, I've seen him get his questions answered under the first two, but not under Trump.
I wonder if that's by accident.
They somehow have an allergy to calling on the Russian journalist in the room. It's pretty fascinating. But Rick, we are joined now with a very different perspective, somebody with a very different perspective, Senator Langford from the great state of Oklahoma and a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Senator Langford, thank you for joining us.
You'd be glad to be able to join you.
So I know you're a Republican member of the Intelligence Committee. You have been very critical of Russia, particularly with Russia's approach to Syria. And in fact, you were in Syria just last month. So I want to get a sense of what you heard from President Trump today. We heard finally, I mean, what may have been the first direct criticism of Russia's actions, specifically in Ukraine, and a reference to their destabilizing theoretically regarding Syria. Has he been critical enough? Has he been? Does President Trump seem like he is in a position to actually be firm in his meeting with Vladimir Putin?
Yeah, we'll see as the days go on. I was very interested by your previous interview there from the Russian perspective of the election interference, when it is incredibly clear that Russia was trying to interfere in our election. There is no question on that by any means that Russia was trying to engage to try to destabilize our democracy. For whatever reason, they've struggled in their elections to have a free and fair election, and they seem to get some sort of pleasure to try to interfere in other elections. To somehow elevate themselves. But it's also been clear with the Russian aggression in Crimea, reaching into Ukraine, and it was the same model that they used again in Syria. They were initially in Ukraine. It were not Russian soldiers. They were dressed as locals, but everyone knew they were Russians, and they kept saying, no, they're not ours. And then later it comes back, yes, they are Russian soldiers. Same kind of MO in Syria, where then later they actually come out, yes, they are Russian special forces and Russian military, and those individuals are now partnered with the Syrians to try to prop up Assad. The Russians do have to explain, and I'm glad that Trump is putting pressure on Russia finally to be able to step in and say, how can you stand by Assad who murders his own people, who uses chemical weapons to attack his own folks and civilians. How can you stand by him as your partner? And wouldn't you continue to be able to force Russia to explain why they are so partial to Assad, who is such a ruthless dictator?
Regarding the election hacking, the president has seemed to have such a hard time acknowledging the Russian role here. He did today, kind of, but I want to play two bits of sound. First, the first bit of sound is Donald Trump way back in September of last year, during that presidential debate with Hillary Clinton. This is before either of the two intelligence community reports on Russian interference. And here's what he had to say back then.
Could also be lots of other people. It also could be somebody sitting on their bed that weighs 400 pounds, okay?
I mean, and the first part of that is he said it could be Russia, it could be China, it could be somebody 400 pounds sitting on his bed. Now we have what he said today.
Well, I think it was Russia, and I think it could have been other people in other countries. Could have been a lot of people interfered.
The answer isn't much different. I mean, he's still saying, yeah. I mean, now he says, I think it was Russia, but what was Russia? It could have been Russia, you know, other people, other countries. Why does he have such a hard time acknowledging what you have just said is blatantly obvious?
That I don't know. I was glad to hear him step out and say it is Russia. And then he said it could have been other countries as well. I don't know if he's trying to allude to everything that was happening during the election time period, not solely putting it on Russia. There's no question that there were major aspects of the hack that happened that were certainly Russia and Russian operations. Could there have been other countries that are involved? Could there have been other individuals also doing hacking? Of course there could. But there's no question that the point of this was Russia. And so glad to be able to hear him step out and to be able to say that. But it's also important that we continue to apply pressure. My main question is, once you know that Russia has hacked into our election system and they're trying to find some way, which they're unsuccessful of, they weren't able to change votes, they weren't able to change any of that. But once you know they're trying to interfere in our election system, what do you do? How do you apply pain? And what I try to do is illustrate it with the Olympics. When it was clear that the Russians were doping their athletes in Sochi, the U.S. Olympic Committee responded by kicking their athletes out of the 2016 Olympics. They faced a real consequence for that that was clear and that was connected. So my issue now is, what is the clear pain that Russia will experience based on their actions? Because I don't think they changed the behavior until they actually have experienced some sort of pain, just like I don't think they stopped doping their athletes until they're actually cut off from international competition.
So tomorrow, the big meeting, President Putin, President Trump, first time face-to-face. Does President Trump, in your view, have to bring up election hacking, or is that a secondary issue or tertiary issue when you've got Syria and even North Korea and you've got other international challenges? Does he have to say, Mr. Putin, President Putin, this happened and this can't happen again and these are the consequences, or can he let this meeting go by without a mention?
No, I don't think he has to in that sense. I think the reports that will come out in the days ahead will continue to reiterate the facts that are on the ground. I think it should be something that's on the staff level at a minimum. But whether the two principals with Putin and Trump have to be able to have that conversation face-to-face, I don't think that's essential. I think some of the key areas that have to be discussed, as you mentioned, North Korea and Syria, we have to have a clear set of agreement. Those are areas that we have to be able to find some common ground on. Like it or not, we've got to be able to work together in Syria to be able to have to remove Assad. And Russia, as I said before, has to explain why they're backing Assad at this point. And why they don't want a transition into a freer government that has a leader that doesn't murder his own people.
Talk about, in your view, what pain would be. Obviously, this isn't a sports competition, and barring athletes wouldn't be enough. What is an appropriate level of pain? What should the response be on the part of the administration to recognize what happened and to make sure that Russia feels it?
Well, let me give you a couple of thoughts on it. Obviously, Congress just passed, or through the Senate, I should say, just passed a sanctions piece on Russia based on what's happening in Ukraine and the Crimea and their continued push. It is not connected to the election piece, though all of us are extremely aware that's one of the aspects. A sanctions section, I think, is important, but it takes years for that to actually take effect. Most sanctions take 4, 5, 6 years before the nation actually feels the full effect of that, but you can begin to roll that out and to be able to have some real pain where they understand if you respond, this is how we respond. The second part about this is harder. and that is dealing with what's called a cyber doctrine. It's something we worked with the Obama administration for years on, to have a clear policy that can be put out that if any nation, whether it's North Korea, Iran, China, Russia, whoever it may be, if they try to interfere in any of our infrastructure or our systems through a cyber attack, we have a structured response that they know if you do this, then this is how we respond. That has not been put into place. And I have already started to encourage the Trump administration to say there's unfinished business from the Obama administration, that there was never a clear statement about the if-then of cyber warfare. And we need to get that done and be able to put that in place and have a series of options of here's how we respond electronically. And it needs to be in kind. This is not about escalations. This is not about we kick out their diplomats, they kick out ours. This needs to be a clear statement that is immediate. Then when we know it is them, you can connect the dots and then say, here's our stated response, and you knew it.
Senator Lankford, I know you have to go. One last question before you do. Can you bring us up to date on where the Senate Intelligence Committee investigation is? How long is this investigation going to go on? How long will it be before you, your committee, will be able to come out and say, these are our conclusions about what the Russians were doing during the election, and what, if any, complicity or collusion there was between anybody or not in Donald Trump's orbit and the Russians?
Yeah, I would assume it's by the end of the year, but it's still months away. We're not done as we try to wrap up the thousands of pages of documents. It's also important to us, and has been from the beginning, that we do this in a bipartisan way. That takes more time, because we've all got to look at the same set of facts and all have to come to the same conclusions. There are lots of folks who will have additional questions as you go through it. You have to chase every one of those questions to make sure all of us are looking at it and say, this is actually what happened. And our three big questions are, did the Russians try to interfere in our election? I don't think there's any question that that's true. The second one is, did any American, and not just someone in the Trump administration, did any American try to work with the Russians to be able to help interfere in our election? And then the third one deals with leaks. How did all these classified documents get into the public view? Because it's extremely important that we continue to be able to maintain the classified documents as classified.
All right, Senator Lankford, thank you for joining us on Power House Politics.
You bet. I'm glad to be able to do it.
So I have to say, Rick, I have been impressed that that committee, and I think Senator Lankford illustrates it, of all the committees looking into this issue, has managed to remain, relatively bipartisan. And I think you heard from him, from Senator Lankford, some very direct criticism, obviously, of Russian activities and by extension, concern about the Trump administration's approach to these issues.
100% agree. And you can hear it when you talk to these senators. They don't get it either. They don't understand why President Trump seems unable to concede this particular point regarding Russia around their role in meddling, and the broader point about whether Russia is friend or foe. That that piece of Senate legislation that Senator Lankford referenced was a pretty startling rebuke to the president, taking away some of the options the White House has to respond to Russia. And I think that they'll continue to stand against him where they feel it's appropriate. I think that feeds the bipartisan nature of this investigation, is that as a starting point, they're at a different place already than President Trump and the Trump administration is, by accepting the findings of the intelligence agencies, accepting Russian interference in the election. That's a given from where they start. And frankly, they're frustrated by the fact that President Trump seems unable, unwilling to do that. I think a little bit heartened, as you heard from Senator Lankford, by the speech today in Poland that seemed to call out the Russians a bit. But that isn't the broad issue of election hacking. And of course, we'll find out tomorrow whether it comes up in that mano a mano meeting.
And, you mentioned the sanctions bill, and I think that it passed the Senate. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was like 97-2.
Or 98,
It wasn't exactly a squeaker. It hasn't passed the House. There's been some questions raised about some parliamentary issues, et cetera, et cetera. But the White House has been quite critical of it. They haven't issued a veto threat yet. But it'd be very interesting to see if we get to that point. The president has to decide whether or not to sign that bill or veto something that the overwhelming majority of Congress, the overwhelming majority of Republicans, have signed on to.
That's right. And look, it gets at the broader policy issues here and the attitude toward Russia. And we're about to learn a lot about President Trump's actual attitude toward Russia. He's a guy that enjoys the engagement on a personal level. He has said contradictory things about even having met President Putin in the past. It will be undeniable that the two will meet. And he's also going to be up against an absolute master of the genre. I mean, some of the classic imagery of recent American presidents has been surrounding personal meetings with President Putin. And he knows the medium of television and of the media as well or maybe even better than President Trump. And that's saying something. So I'm curious to see if he has met his match in terms of the imagery and the manipulation that goes around it and the personal statements that go even in body language.
Nobody speaks more loudly with body language than Vladimir Putin. I mean, you look back to some of those meetings with Barack Obama, and whatever they were saying, you could almost like turn the sound down.
Look at the
body language. But I thought in our first interview with Andrei Sitov, again, somebody clearly with the Russian perspective, it was interesting to me to hear him say that their view is that American policy essentially remains the same.
Yeah.
And this is actually something that Putin said. I don't know if you got a chance to watch the Oliver Stone interviews, but it's a point that he makes as well. But American policy essentially the same. We will see. We will see if there's ever a time to test that proposition. It's the change from Obama to Trump.
And look, you talk about body language. Let's see if Putin can suppress a smile because he is enjoying this moment. If he's able to keep a smile away from his face, you don't want to play poker against that dude.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for Powerhouse Politics. We will be back next week with more Powerhouse Politics. Thanks for listening.